Welcome to At the Organ, a weekly show about the classical organ and its music, heard on organlive.com every Sunday or streaming from our website anytime. Just point your browser to attheorgan.com for more information. Now, let's hear what's happening this week at the organ.
I'm Jim Logan. Welcome to another edition of At the Organ. Recently, I had the opportunity to travel to Philadelphia. I visited the Gloria Dei Old Swedes Episcopal Church on Swanson Street. It's near the corner of Christopher Columbus Boulevard and Christian Street. This is in the historic section of Philadelphia, along the Delaware River, to about a mile or so south of Penn's Landing. I met with Paul Fako, the music director at Gloria Dei.
First of all, tell me a little about the church. Of course, a very historic church. Tell me a little bit about this. It's a national landmark, isn't it?
It is, I think. The place, the grounds, the congregation is the oldest continuing congregation in the country, I believe. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a real historian who can answer that more correctly, but some of this might be winging it. But the congregation, I believe, was founded in 1647 in a small wooden house by a bunch of Swedes. And then the present building was built, started in 1699, finished in 1700, and was still Swedish at the time, and Swedish Lutheran. And then in the mid-1800s, 1840s, I believe, the Swedes kind of dwindled, and it became American Episcopalian. And the balcony you see here, that if you look, you see how it cuts the windows?
Right.
All the balcony is new and really doesn't belong in this building.
Okay.
It's a lovely little building. There are a lot of interesting things about the history of this place. The pre-colonial history, the stuff that nobody knows in this country. How the Swedes were here first, and the Dutch came and beat up the Swedes, and then the English came and beat up the Dutch, and there were other things going on. The Swedes were famous for getting along with the local Lenape Indians. One of the preachers translated Lenape into Swedish and wrote a Lenape Bible. I think Lenape was the right one. Again, the real historian can tell you some of this. I really don't know. Oh, I don't know what else I can say about this. The organ here is nowhere near as historic as the rest of the place. It's a 1903 Hook and Hastings that I had completely rebuilt in 1993 by R.J. Brunner and Company, a company not far from here, just outside of there.
I saw the dedication on YouTube that you have for that.
Yes. Okay. Oh, I finally found the recording, so I only posted it recently.
Oh, okay.
Because I couldn't find the recordings, and it's really amateurish video that somebody took that I found. Mm-hmm. But finding R.J. Brunner was a gem. He was one of the very few people that was on time and in budget, both, because we have a pageant that happens in December called Lucia Fest. It's a Swedish festival of lights. It's a solstice, or I guess not solstice, what's the other one, the winter. I guess it's winter solstice,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Celebration. And the organ went out then, completely removed, mm-hmm. and then it had to come back by Easter. Mm-hmm. And he did it. And to surprise him, there were many people that were shocked at the price of redoing this organ. It's a small organ, but it still was expensive. Mm-hmm. So I hired a bus, and I took 30 parishioners out to the shop where the organ was partially built in the shop. And after seeing what Ray had done, they came back exclaiming, wow, he did all that for only that? Could have cost a whole lot more. I think it was $150,000 for a 27-rank Hook and Hastings built in 1903.
Now, how long have you been doing music?
How long have I been doing music?
When's the first time you remember actually doing music publicly? Put that
oh,
way.
Publicly is different than how long I've been doing music. I think my first public concert, I was 8.
Okay.
I think that's when I played the Beethoven Pathetique Sonata. And,
is that on organ?
No, piano.
Piano.
Oh, yeah. Organ, no. I started as a pianist. Mm-hmm. And still I'm a pianist. I mean, organ is just, I'm just a keyboard player. You know, organ is just another keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, harpsichord, piano, synthesizer, you name it. I first got interested in the organ, my brother, who was 20 years older than me, I come from an odd family, he was a big sound freak, and organs are big sound freak pieces, you know. So he would play recordings, and I would listen to him and say, one person made all that noise? I'm in. So I think I played the organ for the first time when I was 12 or something like that. But before then, my first public concert was a pianist, and I played several concerts then. And my mother, who was a member of the choir at First Presbyterian Church here in Philadelphia, where Alexander McCurdy, who was the organ teacher at Curtis, was the music director. And my mother had this kid that played lots of music and didn't know what to do with it. So I played my piano pieces for McCurdy, and then he wanted me to go play the organ just to see what would happen, because I'd never played one before, and that's when I played that organ. It's a pretty large, it was a large Moeller Austin at the time, mm-hmm. around 100 ranks, made a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
And he put on a lot of noise and had me play a chord, and apparently other little kids would like get scared, and I just kind of got into it. In fact, I think I tried to play the Pathetique Sonata on the organ. and he decided that I would be an organ major at Curtis. But I had to, of course, go learn how to play the organ, so he sent me to a guy named David Spicer, who is a fabulous guy, who runs the Albert Schweitzer competition up in outside of Hartford, Connecticut. I think it's called Wethersfield, a little town. But he sort of taught me how to play the organ. And then I did an audition at Curtis and got into Curtis with McCurdy.
How did you start with Gloria Dahey? How did you get this church?
I was assigned here by Alexander McCurdy
In
1969 or so. McCurdy did a really cool thing. He kind of took charge of the poor parishes in the Philadelphia area, and he sort of sent some of us students around and said, you go play there. Kind of took care of them. And I guess it was like an internship, in effect. I think I got a few dollars, but it still is a poor parish. It's not a parish that can pay a lot of money. And then it was even poorer. And that's how I started here. First time I played here was probably 1969. And then I played here for a couple of years and then moved on to other places. And then in the mid-1980s, after I had passed through Europe, I lived in Europe for a while working in opera houses and all that, I went into a little bar called Dirty Frank's at 13th and Pine, very famous Philadelphia bar. And I found the guy who was the, at the time, preacher of this church, a guy named David Rivers. And we started talking. I didn't know who he was because I forget people easily. I had met him when I was here before. And he started talking about how he wanted to have a musician. Apparently the musician that they had was leaving. And I was really not that interested. So I said, interest me. You know, buy me a few beers, buy me some drinks, and we'll talk. And I don't know, this might have been 1984 or 85, something like that. And he kept buying me drinks until I said yes. And so I've basically been the regular music director here since. Yes, I don't know exactly. Mm-hmm. And David Rivers is since retired, and his successor now, Joy Siegel, is the preacher here.
But you have a bell choir here, too?
Yes, there's a bell choir. Oh, bells, this is a place that does not have a lot of musical talent. So bells are a great way to sound good. Bells are always in tune, And their harmonic structure is such that even when wrong notes are played, they sound pretty. So I have about five people that will swing a bell, and they sound pretty. In fact, on my website, there are some posted recordings of the bell players, and Glory Day Old Swedes also has a website. It's old-swedes.org. There are, I think, some posted examples of the bell choir and some other stuff, too, that we've done here. They give me a little bit of money to hire a professional choir for Easter and Christmas, and I do some real music then, but otherwise, I do what I can.
You're listening to At the Organ. We'll continue my interview with Paul Faco in just a few minutes, but now it's time for some music. Here's Paul Faco to introduce this selection.
This will be the Dorian Toccata by Johann Sebastian Bach.
How many CDs have you recorded so far?
14.
14. And what was the first one?
First one was Incantation. Okay. I was working with RK Records, Rich Kruger, who is no longer alive, unfortunately. But I did a series of four recordings at the All Saints Episcopal Church in Worcester, Massachusetts, back in, I think, mid-1990s. I'm not actually sure exactly when. But it was Incantation, Time's Escape, I'm Making the Flowers Dance, and Outburst. My first four CDs, I made them all there in one day.
Okay, all in one day.
In one day. We just did one day recording session. Okay. And though Time's Escape is interesting because I had a guest musician, Stuart Diamond, with me, who played a 1980s, now a relic electronic instrument called a Lyricon. Stuart started life as a clarinet player, and a Lyricon was a clarinet mouthpiece that triggered a synthesizer. So it's a really cool recording. It's kind of a new age style recording, which was kind of popular.
You mentioned you'd like to get involved with jazz music and kind of mixing a little classical with jazz to some extent.
Involved in all styles of music. I have trouble with all the various musical critic type people because I'm actually not jazzy enough for the jazz people. I'm not classical enough for the classical people. I'm not rock enough for the rock people. I'm not avant-garde enough for the avant-garde people. I kind of do what I want. I use elements of many things. If you go to my website, fejko.com, which is fejko.com, you can find out a lot of things there, recordings. And you can also go to YouTube and just do my full name, Paul Fejko, like that as a search. No space, just Paul Fejko, one word, and you'll get some video clips. And also, a lot of my jazz work is in my performance space that I live at and own in Chester, Pennsylvania, called André Café Acoustique, which is spelled the French way, acoustique with a Q-U-E at the end. And if you go to andre-cafe.com, you can find that website. And if you do André Café Acoustique, all one word, on YouTube search, you can find almost 100 video clips now of me and other people as well playing at that performance space, and that's mostly jazz. Some classical, but mostly jazz, and my jazz world is the avant-garde jazz world, like Cecil Taylor and Sun Ra. I like avant-garde free-form jazz.
I also noticed on your website you're talking about another project you're working on, setting up, a different kind of artistic areas.
That's the part of the Chester work. It's called the Chester Performing Arts Project. Okay. Chester is one of those unfortunate little industrial cities that fell on extremely hard times in the 1960s when industry left. Chester was a big shipbuilding area. In fact, Chester in the 1920s was considered to eclipse Pittsburgh as the second city of Pennsylvania. It was expected to have more than 1 million people because shipbuilding was big, and Chester was a big shipbuilding town. And then shipbuilding left in the 1950s and went to Greece. If anyone that's heard of Aristotle Onassis knows that he actually took one of those companies from Chester, and Chester just died on the vine instantly. And now it's trying to come back. And I was approached by some people because I had done similar work in other places. I worked in Trenton and worked with Mill Hill Playhouse, and which was a recuperation effort. And then in Philadelphia, I was with a group called Convergence Dancers and Musicians that was actually founder of the First Friday series. It is now big business in Philadelphia. When we did it, we were like the only ones doing it, but it was opening up the galleries and the performance space and doing stuff. So Chester, they knew that I was familiar with working in that kind of realm, recovering something. So they offered me a building and said, here, do something with this. So here's my global plan. If you give me $100 million, I'll turn Chester into an artistic center of the region. They, of course, have not done that. It's cost me a lot of money. It's all about politics, and they wanted me to just take over a building and put it on a tax roll, and that's it. So André Café Acoustique is all that I have of the Chester Performing Arts Project. But the project originally, as I scoped it out, was going to be a proscenium opera house, an orchestra hall, a theater for dance only, a dance-only theater, because I work in theater and dance a lot, a black box theater, a little cabaret, which is sort of what the André Café Acoustique, and then a music library, and probably an arts talk radio station. Those are my plans. In fact, if you go to, I think it's chesterperformingartsproject.com, or CPAP, C-P-A-P, Chester Performing Arts, you go to cpap.org. Okay. I believe that will also get you my plan, which has not yet been realized.
You're going to San Francisco in the very near future.
Yes, in August I'll be playing, August 3rd, I'll be playing at Grace Cathedral in an afternoon concert, the Sunday afternoon concert. And on August 10th I'll be playing at St. Mary the Assumption Cathedral, so I get the two cathedral concerts. St. Mary's will be a rather conventional organ concert, with some cool pieces, some music obviously by Richard Purvis, and maybe a piece by Keith Chapman, who was one of Richard Purvis's students and a friend of mine. And at St. Mary's, my concert will be a more experimental, but still a classical concert. I shall be playing on the piano the Franck Prelude, Chorale, and Fugue, which is a big piano piece. And on the organ, I will play the Franck Grande Pièce. The concept is to compare how one composer dealt with the challenges of writing a major piece for piano and a major piece for organ. Both pieces were written roughly in the same period in his life, and they're both very large pieces. They're both 20 minutes or so each. So that's an experimental concert to see if the piano people will come out to an organ concert, and if maybe some organ people might come in here a piano piece.
Do you have any other projects coming up?
Nothing special for the moment. I'm still trying to make the Chester Performing Arts Project go, and concerts and ideas come up all the time, and some I turn down and some I don't. Most of my work is being done right now at Muhlenberg College in Allentown. I'm working as a musician with the theater and dance departments, supplying music for classes and for occasional shows. So I'm always looking for challenges. I'm always available for concerts. Should people find an interest and be, you know, I'm here.
Okay. And you mentioned the last CD you did was about 2006. Do you have any plans on doing anything more with of course, I guess, as we were talking about earlier on our own here, the music industry has changed a lot. Putting a CD isn't always necessary the way with digital music is. Do you have plans on just recording even just certain songs to put on? Or
I am not sure how I want to do this. I have a few people wanting me, a few more much younger, like rock songwriter type people that want me to add tracks to their stuff, which is kind of fun. Oh, I am not sure what I have in mind to do. I have some stuff that I've recorded. My last year's concert at St. Mary's in San Francisco, a few of those pieces are available on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, which is YouTube/Paul Faco, just like that. Oh, I don't really have plans. I probably should have some. No one's given me any ideas. I'm often looking for ideas, too. Many of my CDs were other people's ideas.
Okay.
Especially the Rager Reibke CD that I did. Oh, somebody wanted me to record How Brightly Shines a Morning Star, the Rager. So I finally did, because he said I would do it well. I figured, okay, I'll do it. And so I went and recorded that, and the Cargaylor at Chorale Fantasy, Jesu meine Freude, and the Reibke Sonata. I put it on a recording. Mm-hmm. But it was somebody else's idea. I often don't have ideas of what to record.
Mm-hmm. You do.
I need an A&R guy.
Oh, okay. You do a lot of improvisation. You do a lot of your own material.
Oh, I've been doing it a lot.
Yeah.
Almost every place I've done a recording, there's been four major locations. Indeed, the Worcester recordings, two of the CDs were Repertoire, Outburst and Incantation, and two of the CDs were pure improvisation, Time's Escape and On Making the Flowers Dance. Every place I have recorded, I've done repertoire and improvisation as separate recordings.
Improvisation, when you do that, can you play the piece again later the same way you played it the first time?
Not a chance.
Not a chance, okay.
Not even almost.
I kind of do the same thing, too. Like if our church needs some kind of music, I just background, I just play whatever's on my mind. But I couldn't tell you what I played.
Oh, I don't remember. I let the instrument tell me how to play it, and if it was a different instrument, it'll tell me how to play it differently. That's what improvisation is great on organs, because organs are so different. Mm-hmm. And each instrument tells me how to play it.
Yeah.
I start playing sounds, and it kind of says, that's not a good sound, that's a good sound.
I think it'll make this organ good, as the acoustics in this church are incredible.
Yeah, wonderful.
And our church is carpeted, and a lot of say, you know the carpeting kind of thing, but they did it a long time ago, and the organs are two manual organs, electric organ, it's just not as, it doesn't have that fantastic sound to it.
The nice thing about being a historical site is no one will put carpeting in here, because it's a historical site, and it has to remain in a certain state.
Well, I can tell you, when we were at the church service this morning, nobody used a microphone, but you could hear them clearly.
Yes, you know, because it has this arch plaster.
Yeah, the sound just sounds great in here.
And imagine what it was like without this balcony.
Mm-hmm.
Because this balcony was an addition. If you're under the balcony, you don't hear quite as well.
Right.
But this balcony did not exist until the 1840s.
Mm.
That's when this place went from Swedish Lutheran to American Episcopal. And apparently its attendance also went up. This place had an enormous congregation for its size. I mean, it's a tiny little church. A full house is 220 people. And it had like 700 people in a congregation from like 1870 to 1920. Hmm. It just had a huge congregation. It had a Sunday school that had 100 kids in it. And then I think, too, this part of Philadelphia, it's the industrial part of Philadelphia, fell on hard times, and so did the church. When McCurdy assigned me here in 1969 or so, there were about 12 members all over 80. Hmm. And the preacher then was a guy named John Roque, who saved this church from being turned into I-95. Hmm. Oh, I-95, you can see it right there,
right
about
the 100
yards
yeah.
down the road. Well, I-95 would have actually been this church. Hmm. But John Roque is the guy that turned this place into a national shrine in the 1940s sometime when the plans were going around. He personally got it done. And then his successor, David Rivers, the guy that conned me into coming back, when I was assigned here, Roque was still the preacher, and during my sort of a period here, Roque retired and David Rivers took over. And that's the part of the story I didn't say, is I did know David Rivers, but I just, you know, he was the new guy. I didn't pay much attention until I came back and accidentally found him at Dirty Frank's. I had no idea he was there. I didn't even remember who he was, but there he was. So there was a 15-year break when I was not here. That's when I was living in Europe, working in opera houses. Most notably, I was music director of the Ballet of Lyon in France, and I was a musician with Maurice Béjart's Ballet of the 20th Century in Belgium, which was one of the big-time dance company back in the 1990s.
You're listening to At the Organ. Paul Fako is going to perform for us again, and here he is to tell us about this selection.
The next piece will be the organ interlude from Leos Janáček's incredibly stupendous, sumptuous mass. It's a fascinating piece of music because it's a conventional mass up to a point. It is a special language he uses. It's in Czech, and Janáček is one of my favorite composers. He goes through this piece. There's a bit of an organ part in it, and then all of a sudden, toward the end, the organ bursts forth in this wild interlude that is then followed by a wild orchestral interlude, and the piece is over. This is that organ interlude. It's noisy. This also shows how this very small little instrument can sound larger than it should sound.
Thank you.
You're listening to At the Organ. Next week is the 4th of July weekend. We've come across a number of organ recitals and concerts scheduled for this week and for the weekend as well. We'll start with Wednesday, July 2nd, beginning at 2 p.m. Enjoy a program of music, tours, and ice cream at the Park Avenue Christian Church in New York City. A free organ recital of organ music by American composer Charles Ives and others, performed by the church's organist and music director Paul Vazile. On Friday, the 4th of July, a program at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. Join organists Christopher Betts and Benjamin Straley at the National Cathedral, accompanied by the Washington Symphonic Brass and the U.S. Navy Sea Chanters. This concert begins at 11 a.m. at the National Cathedral. Also on the 4th of July at 4 p.m. in Florida at the Memorial Presbyterian Church in St. Augustine, an organ concert and sing-along of patriotic songs. The Preservation Society of Memorial will present organist Ray McDonald from Memorial Presbyterian Church and Rodney Cleveland, organist at Lakewood Presbyterian Church in Jacksonville. Another 4th of July concert in Kennett Square near Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, the Longwood Gardens Ballroom will present the Organ Camp Performance Summer Series. This will be the 4th of July at 1 p.m. This concert will feature some of the nation's top high school-aged organists. And Sunday, July 6th at 7 p.m. at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross in Boston, Massachusetts, Robert Smith will play the cathedral's 1875 Hooke and Hastings pipe organ, music from Bach, Wesley, Howells, Varon, and much more, including special organ arrangements of Sousa's Stars and Stripes Forever and John Williams' Imperial March from Star Wars. You can find links for these on our website at theorgan.com. Thank you to Paul Fako for taking the time to join us today on At the Organ. And don't forget to visit our website at theorgan.com. You can listen to this program and previous episodes of At the Organ. You can use the links to learn more about the music and the events, especially the 4th of July ones we mentioned. And you can leave your feedback on the comments section for each show. Please join me again next week on At the Organ. I'm Jim Logue. Have a great week.
At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you here next week at the Organ.